So today, we're going to talk about how we're perfectly imperfect. Anybody imperfect here? Got a little work to do over here. Perfectly imperfect. Story. I was asked to go help someone in our congregation who said I can use her name, Gail Schultes. Anybody know her? She's always trying to find something for me to do. Love you, Gail. She's watching at home. Anyway, she wanted me... come together and put together a shelf or little cabinet. It's got some drawers, little things on there. So she calls me, hey, I got this thing in the mail. Probably got it from wish.com. Love you, Gail. We can pray for our sister and her addiction. She's like, I need help getting it together because it says two people need to put this thing together. It takes about 2 hours. I'm like, okay, sure. I got this day available. I'll come up. So I go to her place. I put this together. Two people and about 6 hours later. Let me say this. She had already put the drawers together. She had done what she could. She put the drawers together. So I'm just trying to get the structure together to put together for her. And it took two of us. It was quite funny because I'm using my elbow, my foot, my chin to hold stuff. She's doing the same from her chair. I thought we were playing Twister for a minute. Anyway, so we finally get this thing put together. It's laying on its side. I'm like, all right, Gail. It looks like everything's in. I don't have any more hardware. Let's tip this thing up. And as soon as we tip it up, we see this. Does anybody see anything on this shelf? Yes, the shelf is wrong. In fact, let's zoom in on that. That's right. The shelf is... Tosh, we still have to work on this. Oh, no. It goes like an automatic. Okay, Rhonda. There. Maybe it'll stay. I don't know. Who knows? Anyway, it's not only upside down, but backwards. Now, let me also say, does anybody ever get stuff where it has four simple steps to put it together, and within those four simple steps are about 100 steps. It should be 400 little steps, but instead it's like four steps. Yeah, they're like, oh, well, this is easy. And I'm like, Gail and I are looking at it. I'm like, I can't tell this. Where's the front? Where's the back? Blah, blah, blah. The directions were horrible. That's what I'm going to say. That's the reason this happened. But anyway, this is what happened. Upside down and backwards. And I just looked at her, and I was like, okay, Gail. I'm like, well, I guess I'll just start undoing some of these things. We'll see if we can get that shelf back. No, I thought about that too. Don't think I didn't think. Someone from the congregation said white paint. And I'm like, yeah, that would work. But I said to Gail, I was like, well, let's see if we can figure it out. And she said two things to me. And the sermon was born. First, she said, oh my, don't worry about it. I can still use this. And then she said, it's totally okay, in a very forgiving fashion. It gives it character. She said, it gives it character. Like, okay, well, every time you see that backwards, upside down shelf, you're going to think of me. She's like, yeah, exactly. She's like, it's going to be, I can use this thing. It doesn't matter. It's going to sit by my bed. And it's all good. It just gives it character. I was like, all right, well, there's a sermon in that. I took a couple pictures. And I knew I was going to use this one day. Got permission from her this morning, thank goodness, because this was what I was going to do. I was like, here it is. So this is about being perfectly imperfect. This shelf is completely imperfect, but it's perfect, right? Because Gail can use this thing. You see the translation here? This is how my sermon was born. So I was talking to... I was thinking about how many times we think we need to be put together right. Oh, we need to be put together right, like these slides. It's just another example. Wait, what are you doing back there? Wait. She's going to try to fix it for me. The scriptures is what I'd like to have up. Thank you. Thank you, Tosh. So we think so many times that we can't be used because we're not put together right. We're imperfect. We can't be used. No one's going to love us. God definitely isn't going to love us because we're not perfect. You guys understand that is entirely not the case. Do you understand that's not the case? All right, there's so many biblical examples to this. So many. In fact, there's so many that I asked my mom the other day, well, I was trying to come up with the character who I was going to use, because there are so many. There's a plethora. And I asked mom as we were going home, as she's tooling around with me, following me everywhere, I was like, hey, mom, so there's like a lot of imperfect people in the Bible. She's like, yeah. I'm like, who do you like? Who's your person? So we had a good conversation about Job. And then later, I was like, hey, Tosh. She's like, yeah. I'm like, a lot of imperfect people in the Bible. Who's your go-to person? And she's like, Moses. I'm like, oh, good. So we had a conversation about Moses. There's so many people in this book that did so many cool, awesome, great, wonderful, magnificent things that were not put together correctly. They were imperfect. I have a list of a few that I came up with. Moses was a stuttering murderer. Right? Oh, by the way, as I go through these, if you don't know the story, you need to jot them down and go back later and read the story about these people, because there are some awesome characters in this Bible. Matthew and Zacchaeus were both tax collectors, so you know they were thieves. But they turned out to be beautiful disciples of Jesus. Mary Magdalene was demon-possessed 7 times over. She was the first person to see an empty tomb and got to tell other people about it, right? Talk about imperfect. Abraham, totally impatient dude, disobeyed God and what God promised, couldn't wait on it, took matters into his own hands, but he became the father of the nation of Israel. David, oh boy, David, thank you. He's your go-to. He's your go-to imperfect person. Lusted after a woman, killed her husband to get her, and then became one of the greatest kings, psalmist, leaders of Israel. Lover of God, right? Lover of God. Then Saul/Paul, we talked about him on Wednesday night. This guy, he had to go into the witness protection program. He had to change his name and everything. He went from Saul to Paul because he was so bad. He was going around killing innocent Christians because of what they believed. But he came like the missionary extraordinaire, right? We read his stuff all the time. Imperfect people in the Bible that God used. We need to remember these people. My go-to this morning is Peter. Oh, we got some Peter lovers in here. I want to talk about Peter. We jump around a little bit in John, but we're going to stay at least in John to get through the story. So if you want later, you can read through the whole entire book of John, or you can read, you know, whatever portions of it you want. But the story of Peter that I want to focus on is his denial and then his reconciliation and that beautiful story. It starts in John 13, 37 and 38. That's where we see Jesus tell Peter that he's going to deny him 3 times, and Peter is in shock. So I'll read it. They're at the Last Supper, and Jesus is telling them, you know, I'm about to go to a place, you can't go with me. He's trying to warn them as best that he can what's going to happen. And in verse 37, Peter says, Lord, why can't I follow you now? He regrets these words, I'm sure. I will lay down my life for you. I'm in it with you, man. And Jesus said to him and answered him in verse 38, will you really lay down your life for me? Will you? Because I tell you the truth, before the rooster crows, you're going to disown me 3 times. So there's Peter. Jesus is predicting his denial, his mess up, his imperfection. If we then go to John 18, we see what happens. And that what Jesus said, obviously, is truth. Jesus is arrested. Things aren't going well. He's having his trial, if you will. And in chapter 18, verse 17, strike one happens. Someone asks, you're not one of his disciples, are you? A girl at the door asked Peter. And he replied, I am not. When you go to verse 25 and 26, we get strike two and we get strike three. As Simon As Simon Peter stood warming himself, he was asked, "You're not one of the disciples, are you?" He denied it, saying, "Nope, I'm not." And then one of the high priest's servants, a relative of the man whose ear Peter had cut off, challenged him, "Didn't I see you with him in the olive grove?" Again, Peter denied it, and at that moment, a rooster began to crow. Oops. Imperfection. How do you think Peter felt at that moment in time when he heard that rooster off in the distance? Oh, man. What a mess up he must have felt he was. I'm sure he felt embarrassed, shamed. I wrote down agony, like, oh, man, I can't believe I just did that. What guilt he must have had. He probably felt that he was no good to Jesus or anyone else. I'm a total failure. I'm totally imperfect. Well, I messed that up. That's why I like him as my example of imperfection. But I like him because I know what's going to happen later, too. Because when we go into John 21, the last chapter, we see a beautiful story. And I'm going to read most of this because this is great. This is where it's at. This is the part where, just like Gail, Jesus says, "I can use that. And it's okay. It's okay. I forgive you." Gives you character. Those two things Gail told me is exactly what I see Jesus doing here for Peter. So let's read starting in verse 1, because I want to. 1 through 17. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples. Okay, so let me just, okay, so Peter has denied him. He hears the rooster. Jesus dies, is crucified, he's buried, and he's risen again. All the great stuff. The Good Friday happened, and the Easter Sundays happened, okay? And Jesus has already showed himself to his disciples. And they're probably like, well, I'm not sure what to do now. So guess what they do? They go fish. I guess it was their day off, so you go fishing on your day off, right? Maybe. So after Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon told them. And they said, "Well, we'll go out with you." So they went out and got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. Not very good fishermen right now. Early in the morning, Jesus stood at the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to them, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "Nope," they answered. He said, "I got an idea here. Throw your net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of a large number of fish. Then the disciple who Jesus loved said to Peter, "It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, jumped into the water. The other disciple followed in the boat, towing the net full of fish, for they were not far from shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish you have caught." Simon Peter climbed aboard and dragged the net to shore. It was so full of fish, 153, but even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread, and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. And this is when he starts to have a conversation with Peter himself. This is the good stuff. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" "Yes, Lord," he said. "You know that I love you." Jesus said, "Feed my lambs." Again, Jesus said, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me?" He answered, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And he said, "Take care of my sheep." The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Now, Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him the third time. I got to be honest, so would I. Do you love me? He said. Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my sheep. I tell you the truth. When you were younger, you dressed yourself and went out. Well, we're going to end there. Jesus said, feed my sheep. Jesus takes this moment and he says to Peter, it's okay, you messed up, dude. I can use that. He commissions him right here. He talks to him and says, look, three times he asks him, and I think it's interesting, he denied him three times. Three times he got to say, yes, Lord, I love you. There's that reconciliation there, and Jesus is saying, I can use you. You are a put-together mess. Your shelf is upside down and backwards, but I'm still going to be able to use you, and he does. If you read in Acts, you can see all kinds of cool stuff Peter does. In Matthew, Jesus even talks about how the church, he's going to be the rock that the church is built upon. Peter is used big time. We are here and we know about the gospel because of a lot of what Peter did for us. All those guys that went out and told, and women, men and women, that went out and told everybody about Jesus, he was one of them, big player here. And Jesus told him, hey, it's all good. I can use you. You're imperfect. You messed up. But please go feed my sheep. I know you love me. Now do this. I mean, I'd say, yeah, he was able to be used. And he didn't say, oh, yeah, well, I messed up and you can't use me. Nope. He listened to Jesus. He took his command. He listened. He didn't use that as an excuse. Don't use your perfection. Your imperfection is an excuse not to do something or not to do anything for Pete's sake. And then the second thing, the forgiveness piece, just like Gail forgiving me about the shelf, and it gives it character. Man, we know Peter's character, don't we? And we're able to see that character that he's a human. He has a testimony through who he is. He knew his story could be used to help other people understand that it's okay, like he's helping me today, understand that it's okay when I mess up. It's okay that I'm not perfect. God can still use me. God still forgives me and can still use me and my character and your character, guys. Everything that applied to the shelf, that applies to Peter, applies to you. You are perfectly imperfect. No one is perfect. No one. Jesus was it. It's time we start thinking about that word imperfect a little bit differently. Instead of the word imperfect, you can separate and put an apostrophe, and it says, I'm perfect. Right? You're welcome. Get rid of the word imperfect in your head, in your vocabulary, because you're perfect for God. He can use you. He loves you. He forgives you. It doesn't matter. In the end, I think we need to all give ourselves a break. God gave a lot of breaks in this Bible, a lot of these characters that I talked about earlier, and then some. The list that I had is just a little skosh compared to all the people in here that were so imperfect. Because guess what? Imperfect people is all God has to work with. That's it. He's got no other option. So you're perfectly imperfect. It's what God needs. It's what God uses all the time. So just let him do his thing. Give yourself a break. Give yourself a break. Imperfect can be looked at differently, just with a couple changes. I'm perfect. Will you say I'm perfect with me? I'm perfect. I'm perfect. God is perfect. We are perfect through him. No more focus on the imperfect. I'm perfect.